at Kennedy Violins in Vancouver, Washington. The Northwest Quartet Fest is a benefit to raise money for local school music programs. There will be raffles, food, an instrument petting zoo, and live music by local student and professional musicians playing genres from classical to Irish to jazz to rock. Again, that's the third annual Northwest Quartet Fest on Saturday, December 7th from noon to 8 p.m. at Kennedy Violins, 508 Southeast 117th Avenue in Vancouver, Washington. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events. KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Escape Reality Reanimated, running on Friday and Saturday, December 6th, 7th, and December 13th, 14th at Milepost 5 in Portland. Escape Reality, performed by a 5-member sketch troupe, features completely new sketches, extraterrestrials and felines included, with a few returning characters. Again, that's Escape Reality Reanimated, running on Friday and Saturday, December 6th and 7th, and December 13th and 14th, at 7 p.m. at Milepost 5, 8155 Northeast Oregon Street in Portland. More information can be found at kbu.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
This is a security announcement. All persons are reminded not to leave their baggage unattended. All unattended baggage.
I want to dedicate this song, Gone Till November, to all you ladies out there crying all alone in your room, and all you fellas going down south, not making it back. May the Lord bless your soul. I love you, girl.
Every time I make a run, girl, you turn around and cry. I ask myself why, oh why. See, you must understand, I can't work a 9-to-5. So I'll be gone till November. Said I'll be gone till November, I'll be gone till November. You tell my girl, yo, I'll be gone till November, I'll be gone till November, I'll be gone till November. You tell my girl, yo, I'll be gone till November. January, February, March, April, May. I see you crying, but girl, I can't stay. I'll be gone till November, I'll be gone till November. And give a kiss to my mother.
Girl, I gotta leave, please don't cry. When I come back, you know the limit's the sky. I take you out to dinner to your favorite spot. Feed you an aphrodisiac just to get you high. Drive by movies, by a cemetery. If my corpse can talk, then I would tell you I was sorry. Life stars are the rich and famous. Some die with the name, some die nameless. Every time I make a run, girl, you turn around and cry. I ask myself why, oh why. See, you must understand, I can't work a 9-to-5. So
welcome, dear listeners. This is Preference. I'm your host, Hedda. This is the Cutie Boo slot. We are here with queer and trans news and culture every Tuesday evening between 6 and 7 p.m. We share this slot with Trans Positive. Tune in next week and find out what they're bringing to you on the air. It's also a pledge drive next week, so we would love to have you, if you're currently a member, to re-up your membership, maybe make a bigger pledge this time around. And if you're not yet a member, we would love to have you join the station as a member and share your pledge with us. We're going to take a moment and hear a little bit of something from my youth, perhaps the best thing about November that exists, a little Art of Noise. We'll be back.
New sun,
dust,
new sun, 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 No sun,
no moon,
no sun,
no noon,
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 no sun,
no moon,
no sun. No proper time of day.
No shade, no shade, no shade,
no shine,
no birds.
No shade, no shade, no shade,
no shine,
no birds.
No shade,
bees.
No shade, no shade,
bees.
No shine,
no birds.
No shade,
bees.
No shade, no shade,
bees.
No shine,
no birds.
No shade,
bees.
No shade, no shade,
bees.
No shine,
no birds.
No shade,
bees.
No shade, no shade,
bees.
No shine,
no birds.
No shade,
bees.
No shade, no shade,
bees.
No shine,
no birds.
No shade,
bees.
No shade, no shade,
bees.
No shine,
no birds.
No shade,
bees.
No shade, no shade,
bees.
No shine,
no birds.
No shade,
bees.
No shade, no shade.
Speed,
no shine,
but
no shade,
speed,
no shade,
but
no shade,
speed,
no shine,
but
no shade,
speed,
no shade,
but
no shade,
speed,
no shine,
but
no shade,
speed,
no shade,
but
no shade,
speed,
no shine,
but
no shade,
speed,
no shine,
but
no shade,
speed,
no shine,
but
no shade,
speed,
no shade,
but no shade,
speed, no shine.
November.
There's Art of Noise. Track is called Opus 4 from way back when, mid-80s. Anyway, this is Preference. We're very glad to be here. I'm Hedda. I have Esther Godoy in the studio with me.
Hello.
Welcome.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, thank you. Do you want to introduce yourself for our listeners? Let's start there.
Sure. Well, as you said, my name's Esther Godoy. I am the founder, producer, and an editor of Butcher's Not a Dirty Word magazine.
And you've skipped back and forth between Australia and here to make this zine work, and probably much more.
Yeah, I mean, that's a long conversation, but I do live full-time in Portland, Oregon at the moment, which is awesome. It's a very Butch-friendly city, a very wonderful place to be. Not necessarily for the magazine, but it does make it a bit easier being in the States. I've got more of a reach here, so mm-hmm. Yeah.
When you say Butch friendly, what is that? What's that experience for you?
I want to say there's so many ways to answer this question. Again, without diverting too far, I want to say that one of the major things in Portland that I noticed the first few times that I came here, which was a big disparity between here and Australia or here and at home, is that. The way people acknowledge my presence here, whether, you know, not necessarily queer people, just like the wider society, the way that my presence is received here is far more, people are far more open to me. I feel like the way that I exist in Portland, when I walk into a coffee shop or into a restaurant, or into my job, like people look at me and they treat me as though I'm just like everybody else. Whereas in Australia, you know, and it's really difficult to speak to this stuff because it is often it's not even microaggression sometimes. It's just the way somebody looks at you, the energy they send to you, or the way they don't send any energy to you at all. Like, mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel dismissed like pretty often just in my identity in Australia, and in Portland, I get to live the experience of just being a regular human, which is... sounds simple, but it has a really large impact on the way you think about yourself and feel about yourself.
Is there variation, if you can answer this, is there variation in that experience for you across Australia?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Melbourne, Australia, which is the most queer-friendly city, apart from Sydney, in Australia. And, you know, I want to say that the major thing is that it's not always about wider society. I think that, like, what does it really mean for a city to be queer friendly is a question I often ask people. Does it just mean that people don't get beat up walking down the street? Does it mean that there's no physical violence towards queer people? you know, what does that actually mean? Because by those standards, Melbourne is incredibly queer friendly. General society, the queer community, like, very open. Everybody is physically safe. The more you dig into that question and the deeper you go, the more nuanced that conversation actually becomes. And I found in my experience and my upbringing in Melbourne as a queer person, I didn't find the city to be incredibly queer friendly. And when I make that statement, I think that there's a very particular way to be queer in Melbourne. There's a very particular identity and gender identity and presentation that you have to hold to be visible and to be accepted. And when you look at the question of is it a queer friendly through that lens, I would go so far as to say no, not so much, especially not in comparison to Portland.
I want to ask you about something I don't often get a chance to ask people. When you mentioned microaggressions just sort of on the
fly.
What does that mean for you when you use it?
Yeah, I think what that means for me, and I always want to preface anything that I say live with that, you know, I can only speak through my lens and how I experience things. This is definitely not across the board, and I don't think it is, but in my experience, the way that I have received and experienced microaggressions and the impact they've had on me has been really, really significant throughout my entire life. I think that, you know, if we're going to put for the purpose of this question and examples, we could say that, you know, and I'm thinking about a conversation I had with my therapist like 3 days ago, and let's say, you know, she was quite, I had a very like significant experience in a space in the USA that was not very queer friendly. And people shouted things at me and they called me names. And I didn't find that at all. I mean, it's offensive, of course, but it didn't hurt me or it didn't make me feel any particular way. I was like, oh yeah, you know, that's pretty standard. That's expected from this space. Get on with my life, get on with my day. But when I think about the things that have really impacted me physically, it's been in the everyday small tap dripping moments of being excluded from environments, being looked at like I am subhuman, being questioned consistently about my gender. And that's not always necessarily from people who aren't queer either. It's just a constant, it's micro because that thing in isolation, you would never say is going to be hurtful or damaging to your psyche. But the impact of those things over time, built up one on top of the other over years, over decades, that's when you find, when you really do some digging into your mental health, you find actually how damaging that stuff can be and how damaging it has been.
Thank you. Butch is not a dirty word, is your zine. You're up to issue 6. Drove you to launch this, and what drives you to keep it going?
I mean, now that we're on the topic of all this stuff, Butch is not a dirty word. The magazine was never supposed to be more than one for a start. It was supposed to be a one-off sort of coffee table book. And when I created the magazine, it was at a time I was still living in Australia, and I was feeling really, really frustrated at you know, I'd gone from being like very mentally unwell, very emotionally unhappy, and not even knowing that, because I didn't know that any other experience existed. So I just thought that that's what life was, you know? And then I travel off to the States and I spend a lot of time in Portland, and I start to experience this different way of living and this different way of being received by society and by my queer community and by people around me. And I feel this significant shift and impact that has on my mental health. And then I'm consistently forced to go back to Australia and then being put back in this environment which doesn't mirror that stuff back to me. So now that I know how good it can feel to experience some, basic humanity, it's pretty much impossible for me to go back to living without that, you know? So I in that time had had unearthed, you know, all these truths about the community environment that I existed in, how that impacted me, and how, of course, if it was impacting me in that way, it must be impacting other people in that way. And I started to speak to that truth. I started to speak to it consistently. I noticed that nobody really wanted to hear it or believed me. They constantly invalidated what I was saying or made it about other things. So I thought, you know, I'm pretty used to not being listened to. That's been my life experience most of my life. So I thought, what better way to communicate this? Instead of me saying these things, why don't I go and ask other people what their experience has been, collate everybody's experience, put it into this magazine, and then put it out into the world? Because then it's no longer me asking people to believe me. It's me literally just showcasing, like, hey, this thing exists, you know? So yeah, I created the magazine basically as a way of, like, you know, speaking to this truth that I had discovered, wanting it to be less about me and my experience and more about a collective experience, and wanting to start a conversation about what was happening at that time for Butch people in Australia. It had such a big response, and it had such a big impact on the community that it ended up getting a lot of positive feedback, a lot of media attention. So from there, I did another issue, and it sort of just rolled on consistently from there. Since, it gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and I think it would be a terrible shame to stop doing something that so clearly helps people, you know.
From a production standpoint, how much work goes into creating each one of these?
so much work. I think that, like, I've been really lucky in that, you know, I spent a lot of time getting my professional life together and getting my work life together, and it did put me in a position where I have the resources to be able to do a project like this. But yeah, it takes up a significant amount of resources, be it financial or time. It's significant that we can only do two issues a year for that reason, and even that's quite a stretch. The other thing is, we don't like to confine it just to the city that we're in. Like, I want to be speaking to butchers all over the world in the places where, like, visibility is needed the most. So, you know, to really have that kind of impact, a worldwide scale, not just a Pacific Northwest thing or a West Coast of the USA thing, like, it takes a lot of thought and mindfulness, and it takes a lot of wide reach. So yeah, it does take a significant amount of resources. I am in a position where I'm able to do that, so it is my way of, like, you know, doing something positive with the privilege I've been given. But yeah, a lot of work goes into it. It's not just me. We've got two other editors. We've got Maddie Imber and Eleanor Rosenthal. We've got photographers all over the place that we pay to go out and photograph people. And then we have the actual people that submit their stories and all of the butchers that like show up for this thing. So it's like, it's a pretty big operation. It's also very small. It's both of those things.
What is the, I guess I'm just going to say international, butch media environment? What is that?
I don't think there is any, which is, I mean, honestly, there is no representations of butch in media generally, let alone in queer media. I think, again, at a time when I was, you know, and I think that changes as we're going on. There are, like, little characters popping up here and there that go beyond the stereotype or beyond the negative stereotype that everybody places on that identity. So that is shifting, and I do recognize that. I think historically, I mean, there's not a ton of dyke media to start with, and even when there is, they tend to totally eradicate the butch representation from it. There's so much butch phobia, and there's so much trying to rewrite that presentation even exists to try and prove to, like, you know, to cis hetero people that being gay doesn't mean you have to be XYZ, whatever it is. Like, I don't know what it is. But we tend to be the first to go, our representation. So I think with Butch, this magazine, I want to be really careful about taking care and time to represent people in a beautiful light and professionally, to make sure the photographs are professional, to make sure the printing is professional, to really give these people the quality that like we're just not afforded as a as an identity.
The focus of this newest issue, I released a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
Is mental health. Before we dig into that subject, where can folks find Butch is Not a Dirty Word?
We've got our online store at butchersnotadirtyword.com. And then our biggest social media platform at the moment is Instagram. Mm. So that's our handle's just at butchersnotadirtyword. Both of those places will lead you to a lot of good content.
Thanks. So, the mental health issue.
Mm-hmm.
What sparked that? I mean, it seems like an obvious question, but I'd like to hear your take on setting out to make this happen.
Yeah, I think that whenever I choose a theme for these magazines, it often coincides with something that's going on in my life or something that I think is important, like as a community to speak to. And I want to say with mental health, it's a thing that affects so many people in the queer community. As I was working through a lot of my own mental health issues and really digging into those and really figuring out what the origin of those are so I can go back inside and heal them from the ground up. Something that, you know, I didn't realize how much being masculine presenting as a child, being masculine presenting as a teenager, as a young adult, I didn't realize how much that actually affected and caused significant disruption to my mental health. I think that I've always just taken that on the chin and been like, oh, that's the way it was. When you're different, this is kind of how it is, and you move on. And when I've actually gone back to work on a lot of my mental health issues, and I had undiagnosed OCD for 15 years before I got help. So as I'm going in, like down that rabbit hole and looking at a lot of that stuff, I realize how significant the impact of my gender presentation has been on my mental health my whole life. And again, like that's my lens. And when I looked back and realized, you know, yeah, how those microaggressions and how those like micro invalidations pile up over years, it's no wonder that when I put a call out for mental health saying, hey, who wants to speak to this? Like I had more submissions than I could possibly count, more than we'd ever had for any other issue. Because I think it's somewhat in the current generation and generations before us and even a few above, I think it's like borderline impossible to have grown up with this identity and to not have received and to not have had that kind of experience. And like I said, that weighs on a person over time. And I found in my conversations with people and in my interactions with people, I honestly am hard-pressed to find any butch-presenting person that doesn't have or hasn't had significant mental health issues. So yeah, I think that I was so lost with that stuff when I had nobody and I didn't understand the experience and I didn't understand the identity when I had no visibility to look to for it. I was so lost in that and had to make sense of it through my own journey. And I think the magazine I'm hoping serves as a little bit of a starting point for people. So if you're out there in another country or another city where like you simply just do not have access to community, you do not have like anybody to hear you or to learn from. The whole purpose of the magazine generally and specifically this issue is to collate all the experiences I've had that have helped me heal, all of the information I can grab from other people that have helped them heal, put it in this magazine and then put it out into the world as a resource for other people that aren't lucky enough to be geographically in places where they have access to that.
Mm-hmm. And you have a series of launch parties, readings.
Yeah.
Here and abroad, is that right?
Yeah. Every issue, I try to do a launch in Australia because I'm there once a year to visit my family, and then I'll do a launch in Portland all the time. And moving into 2020, I'm hoping to reach out to some other cities in the States, probably Chicago and LA as well. And those events, I want to say that the feedback I've had from people that come to those events has always been so amazing. Like, again, it was not intentional the way we create that space. It's something that's unfolded authentically because of the energy of the project and the authenticity of it. But, you know, those events are such a roller coaster of emotion. Like, you have people coming in just laughing and crying and, like, you know, feeling joy and then feeling anger. And it fully is like this journey the whole time. And I make sure I curate the speakers in a way that, like, yeah, takes people into feeling, not just remembering those memories or not just like listening to stories, but into really truly feeling the emotion of what people are trying to convey. And then also a space where, like, all kinds of queer people feel comfortable. I think there are so few community queer events where you have people that, you know, you have young baby queers coming, and then you also have like elder folks who have paved the way for us all in the same room. And that's something really special about those events, is that it attracts all kinds of people.
And for issue number 6, Portland hosted its reading and launch party a couple of months ago.
Yeah, I think it was a month and a half ago now. Yeah.
And how was that?
Again, it was so amazing. Sometimes I feel like, oh, people might get bored of this event because it's kind of, you know, a similar format every single time. But this year I actually had to add a second show because we always sell out. And then we sold out of those two shows like 2 or 3 weeks before the event even happened.
And this is Portland, where people famously don't RSVP until
exactly
6 hours before.
Exactly. But yeah, we've consistently sold out every show we've ever done. And I think with good reason. And like, yeah, we really put the care and the time and the energy into making it special for people. Mm-hmm. I think that there's so few spaces that celebrate that identity specifically, that it's a real treat for people to feel safe and seen and celebrated and at the center of an event.
Mm-hmm. What are you working on next?
Issue 7 focuses on butch for butch romantic relationships and best friendships.
Oh.
So it's going to be a very sweet issue, and we're asking people to write stories about how they met their favorite butch. And we've got, yeah, so group photos and couple photos. It's going to be very cute, yeah.
And tell us again where folks who might want to participate in that can find you.
Again, either the website, butchisnotadirtyword.com. We have a submissions form. Or if you send us through a private message on Instagram, our handle is at butchisnotadirtyword. We'll get back to you that way.
Great. We're going to take a break. It's a little taste of Tina Turner. Here we go. We'll be right back.
Let me say the same, baby, since we've been together, ooh, loving you forever is all I need. Let me be the one you come running to.
Say,
is Tina Turner. It's her 80th birthday today. It's as if you can imagine that. She was, I guess, a little younger than I was when that track came out. She was must have been in her early to mid 40s. we have somebody else who wants to comment on Tina here and her birthday.
Funny, huh?
Tina Turner's hair looks like one of the houses the Three Little Pigs built. Girls,
that was Madam. Do you know Madam?
It looks like the Muppets.
It is a puppet.
It is a Muppet or a puppet?
She was a puppet in the 70s and in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Madam was this sassy. She wore these gowns with ruffles and boas, and she was always making racy jokes. And she would sing too, and she would lay across a piano while she sang. She's very flirtatious. Anyway, she had a little cute little joke there about Tina Turner, and she was voiced and handed, I guess, by a gentleman named Waylon Flowers, queer, and he died in the 80s, ending Madam's career as well. And it's his birthday as well, along with Tina Turner. So I thought I'd give him a little shout out there, a little airtime through Madam on this, his birthday. And their birthday, I suppose. I'm here with Esther Godoy. We are talking about Butch Is Not a Dirty Word, issue number 6. The mental health issue came out this autumn to acclaim and with successful readings here in town. And the next issue, number 7, is, I want to say... it's a passion. We're talking about passion. We're talking about connection.
Yeah, we're going to call it the Butch for Butch issue.
Butch for Butch, perfect. Esther, tell us again where folks can find Butch Is Not a Dirty Word online.
The website, butchisnotadirtyword.com, or our biggest social media platform is Instagram with the handle @butchisnotadirtyword. Both of those, yeah. Will give you an entry point into some really good content.
So this issue, number 6, is that just came out, is the mental health issue. What are the topics and themes of the previous issues that have launched?
Okay, so issue 1 was an introduction, so that was pretty random. It was all over the place. We had a lot of Butch folks talking about just their general stories about being Butch, and then we also had a lot of folks who are attracted to the Butch presentation talking about why. They felt that attraction. So it was, you know, and I think we touched on this early, but for those of you that have just tuned in, that was really important information that needed to be conveyed in Australia at that time, because there was no love for Butch folks. There was no narrative about why people were attracted to them and why people valued them or their value at all. And that wasn't amongst the wider society of Australia. That was like pretty... That was coming from the queer communities. So the purpose of issue 1 essentially was to collate this experience that I'd had in the USA, get stories from all kinds of other folks, and then to put that in a nice, neat little package that people could pick up and enjoy. So that's issue 1. Issue 2 focuses on family. And I think the point of that issue was really to start humanizing the Butch identity. I think when most people see that portrayed in the media, or out in the street, if you don't know what a Butch person is and you're not around them often, there's a particular stereotype and there's a particular narrative that gets assigned to us. So the whole purpose of photographing people with their families, with their lovers, with their children, with their parents, was to show these people happy in happy relationships and in happy family units, to start humanizing them and to not, you know, to try and break down that narrative about them being like staunch, emotionally unavailable lone rangers out there in the world, you know? So that was really effective for doing that. Issue 2. Issue 3 focuses, the theme was intergenerational. So what we did was we got a lot of stories from, you know, younger folks about what it was like to be Butch in their generation. And then we sort of bounced those off of stories from older folks, elder folks, And what it was like to be butch in their generation. So it was a comparison to see and to speak to the things that had changed and the things that hadn't changed over time. I think the youngest person in that was 11 and the oldest might have been in their early 80s, I think it was. So it was a really good cross-section. And then issue 4, which was my favorite, most people's favorite, was the love and sex issue. And that was a really sweet issue. We got a ton of people to speak to their first experiences with love and sex and what that looked like for them. And it was just a really sweet and cute and lovely production, that one. And I think by issue 4, we'd also gotten our feet a little bit with the whole production of it. So it was a lot tighter in its visual presentation and in the editing. That's when it really started to tighten up into this, you know, full-blown kind of publication. Whereas prior to that, it had been a more zine type of space. And then onward from there, we went to issue 5, which was the work and professional issue. And again, I think it's so important to, you know, there's a particular thing that we as a queer community really celebrate. And generally speaking, it's people, you know, we place a lot of emphasis on artists and on musicians and on the creative pursuits, which is a fantastic and awesome and amazing, and I think we should. I think often that gets lost in that conversation is all of the wonderful and amazing things that people do aside from that don't necessarily get much airtime. So to speak to people about what they do for work and what kind of energy and impact that they have on the world, and also just the experiences they've had in the workplace, which stereotypically can be a pretty non-queer friendly space to be in. So there's a lot of stories in there about, you know, all kinds of different professions. You know, we have people that are like deep in business, in IT, had somebody running a boxing gym, we had a sex worker, we had people that work in hospitality in the service industry, and then we had lawyers and people that are academics. Like, it was the full spectrum of what, you know, people can possibly do for work. And that was a really super interesting issue too, I think. And then onward to issue 6, which was the mental health issue.
Are each of those issues available on the website?
They are. So they're all available at the moment. We're no longer doing reprints of back issues because it's just getting too expensive at the moment because we've got 6 issues out now. So whatever is there at the moment pretty much is all that's going to be there for issues 1 to 5. I think we've probably got like maybe 100 copies left of each. So if anybody wants a full set, now's your time to get in there and grab it because they're going to be out of print pretty soon.
And then they'll start to become collector items.
Exactly. They'll be collector's items. We'll always have the digital. We have digital downloads up there as well, which are cheaper and more accessible. So they'll always be there. But yeah, the hard copies are definitely going to be collector's items over the next 6 to 12 months as they run out. Mm-hmm.
Have you considered donating any of those copies to local libraries?
Yeah, absolutely. Basically, anyone that reaches out, we tend to send stuff off. Mm. Yeah, all you have to do is get in touch and we'll totally help you out.
Wonderful. So tell us again what the focus of issue number seven of Butch is Not a Dirty Word.
Okay, so issue 7, we are looking at... we're centering on butch for butch romantic relationships because that's a topic that's so often in our community procures a strong response from people. And I think it's really important to showcase, yeah, all kinds of relationships. I think it's important to break down the stigma around those kinds of relationships. There's so much internalized homophobia within our community that the fact that we even have to talk about that as an anomaly, two butch people romantically engaging with each other is pretty ridiculous at this point. But again, it's all about showing the joy and the happiness and the humanity in these people. It's an identity that just so often is dehumanized that I think it's so important to show examples of butch people thriving, being in healthy relationships, and being joyful, because it's not often an image that you get to see, or it's not a narrative that is out there so much with this identity. So yeah, I want to focus on romantic relationships, but then I also want to speak to the importance and the sweetness of having, you know, platonic friends that are butch and your best butch buddy, and how important it is to have those kinds of relationships in your life, somebody that understands your experience and somebody that can hold space for you and that you can hold space for and understand their relationship. You know, there's some things that you just don't want to have to explain every single day, and to have somebody in your life you can share that with is such a wonderful joy to experience. So again, I just want to showcase that and hold some space for that.
Yeah. When it comes to curating the submissions you have coming in and creating a magazine out of it, not exactly sure how to put this, but what are the models you're working from? Who do you turn to and say, they did this?
You know,
I'm doing this too.
I think that when I started this, I used to religiously read. There was a magazine called Hello Mister, which was a magazine for gay males. And the thing I liked most about that magazine is I could pick it up and I wasn't reading a story. I was reading a real life story. It wasn't about something amazing that somebody had done or something completely out of the ordinary. It included stories, everyday stories, and I really enjoyed being able to jump into the experience of another person, another queer person, and to either relate, you know, to what they'd experienced, or to just observe from afar. And I think the most important thing about that, again, I keep coming back to humanizing people. So when I used to pick up Hello Mister, that's what I loved about it. And I noticed that there were so many iterations of that type of thing for gay men. There were barely any, I think, if any, for queer women, and definitely none for butch folks. So I remember thinking, man, how cool would it be if somebody did this for butch people? I wish that existed. How cool. I remember taking a photo of a passport photo I had of my face, and I just put it on top of the magazine and taken a photo being like, oh, how good would it be if this existed? And then 6 months later, I was like, well, why didn't I just do it? So I want to say that I took inspiration from Hello Mister, but then it's so intensely different from Hello Mister 2. And also the way that Hello Mister evolved over the years after that was probably pretty far away from what it was initially. So I want to say, there was definitely inspiration that came from those places. But what it is in its essence, I haven't seen anything else like it out there. It truly is just somebody's personal account of an everyday story, along with a visual image of them. And the stories are so vulnerable. It's like really people opening up and sharing this part of themselves. And I want to, it's nothing that was planned or curated. It kind of just came into fruition that way, and whatever we're doing is working because it's having such a positive impact on people. I'm constantly getting that feedback, so it's this formula now that exists that I'm just like, it's not broke. I don't want to manipulate it in any way. And obviously there's always a temptation to manipulate it for it to be more marketable, to be able to make more revenue on it so you can put it back into it. But any way that I've looked at doing that would completely ruin the essence of it and what it actually is, and it would take away the joy and fulfillment I receive from doing it, and it would change what it was for people. So I'm just keeping it as it always has been. It's a formula that works, and it's something that people really appreciate.
Thanks for that. Do you find folks coming to you saying, you're the person whose work I want to be working from, you're the model that I want to be, that I want as a starting point in creating my own media or something else?
I think that's, I definitely have people reaching out consistently, asking for advice or wanting to catch up and have a professional chat just about, it's not specifically, I think it's such a, print is so almost dead in this world that barely anybody wants to touch print, right? So I don't have a lot of people coming to me saying, I want to make a magazine, how do I do it? I think that people reach out because they see the energy of this thing, right? They see the energy of this thing purely existing authentically, and there's no ego in it, right? So we're not sitting there posting photos of conventionally attractive people. We're not sitting there, you know, only portraying a very specific thing that people want to see to get lots of likes on the internet or to get people stocking it in a bookstore. Like, it's authentic, it's real, there's no ego attached to it, it's purely community driven. And that energy that's around that, like, people can tell and people respond to that. And I think when people reach out to me and want to talk to me about it, it's always because of that. Because it's you know, to do a queer magazine about butch people, no one out there in the world is trying to do that. No one out there is trying to, like, reproduce that. No one out there is trying to copy that. Like, people simply don't have the time and resources to do that. And it's such a small cross-section of the population of the world, right? So there's not a ton of people trying to do it. But people do see, people have been following it from day dot when it was nothing to what it's turned into now. And they see the extent of its growth and how quickly it's grown and how much of a reach it has at this point. And when people see that trajectory, that's what they want to talk about. And that's what they want to talk about for their own projects or for their own profession. And that discussion itself is so large. As you know, like, I can sit here and say, well, it was kind of an accident and it wasn't really meant to be, and then it was. But if I go back and look at all of the personal growth that I did and all of the thought systems I had to employ to stay focused, to do this thing, to, you know, to ensure that it consistently has this reach, when I look back and actually think about that, there is a formula, and it's simple but not easy, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if, like, that's kind of veering away from your question a bit, but this project and the response that it's had, and then how it's impacted the rest of my life, my career, my side projects, the other things that I do, has been so significant. And when I look back on that journey, and when I look back and when people ask me, how do you reproduce that? Yeah, I do have a lot of understanding and ideas now about that, but it's only through going blindly through the dark with this project that I've able to learn that. So it's truly been a gift to me personally. It's very selfless and it's also very selfish, right? So it's selfless in the sense that I do this because I wish so badly I had access to something like this when I needed it. So I do this for other people so they have that. And then the positive impact it's had on my life and the healing that I get to, you know, to obtain whilst doing this is pretty significant. So it's both of those things wrapped up into one.
Is there anything else you want to say sort of about where that fits in for you, where that process has molded you?
Yeah.
Someone you weren't before.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, it's funny, like, the things that come, gosh, if you can learn how to harness your pain, and you can learn how to harness all of the traumatic things that happen to you, and of course that's not always possible, like, again, this is my lens and my experience, and the level of those things that I've experienced is so vastly different from other people. But I've something that I've learned to do over the years accidentally was to harness all that negative energy and harness all that anger and harness all that pain and to try and transmute it into something that, you know, me making this magazine was me. It's like there's the light side of it, which is what I've explained throughout this whole interview, and then there's the dark side of it, which was me being so angry and feeling so small and so invalidated that it was like, you know, a big finger up to everybody that didn't listen to me and that wouldn't hear me and that made me feel small my whole life. And it was like, yeah, we'll watch this, do this. And like, that's a pretty dark energy to hold. But for me, it's been like one of my biggest motivators in life is to, you know, the best revenge. And when you're in an unhealed place, you still feel like you want revenge, you know? When you don't understand how to forgive and you don't have those tools and that capacity to, you still do want that revenge. And I found that like the best revenge that I've ever experienced is like learning to be as happy as I possibly can be and learning to have as much of a positive impact on the world as I possibly can. And there's nothing more powerful than being able to communicate to people, not through words, but through example. And I tried to use my words to communicate my whole life, and I was shut down my entire life. Nobody ever listened to me. So I had to learn to employ different communication tactics. And it's so much more powerful to show someone something than it is to stand there with your finger trying to make them believe that you're right. You've got to get people through the back door of their brains, of their subconscious. So to do something like this magazine gave me the opportunity to do that. All of the negative and dark energy I had around my identity and the frustration of like queer community not accepting me, I ended up being able to turn into this positive thing that has a positive impact on everyone else, right? And on myself. So it started off dark. The motivation started off dark, but I'm so far along my healing journey now that it's kind of mostly light. It's never all going to be light. There's always shadow, but just learning that doing this magazine has made me understand, I guess, how powerful I am. Prior to this, I didn't think of myself as a creative person. I don't have any experience writing. I don't have any experience with photography. I don't have any experience with creative pursuits at all. The trajectory of this magazine has made me realize how much of a skill set I do actually have in that space and how powerful it is to have that skill set along with all of the other professional skill sets I procured in my life. So those two things together are like this very powerful driving force now. And I want to say that without this magazine, like I don't know if I ever would have come upon that and come across that. Again, I think that went a bit off topic, but here we are.
Oh, we just have a couple of minutes left, and I'm thinking about you as a youngster.
Oof.
Go back to where we started, I think. What would you say to you? I mean, other than saying, here is the magazine, here's something different, which I haven't seen before, but what would you say?
As a young person, I would desperately try and communicate to myself how important it is not to shut your inner light down because it's not being received. And to live based off of what you feel, not off of logically what you think you need to do, is to really try and keep that light alive. I think for me, that light was definitely buried and didn't really come back out until I was 30. So that's probably been the most painful lesson to learn, is refinding that and realizing that it was gone in the first place. So trying to encourage myself to stay with what sparks the inner joy.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much, Esther. It's been a pleasure spending time with you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, so butchisnotadirtyword.com. Check out all 6 issues. If you have submissions for number 7, Sex and Romance, Butch.
Yeah, Butch for Butch Couples and Friends, get in touch.
Coming up next is Calculated Conversation. I want to thank Soumya for being in the booth and making all of this possible, as well as you listeners. We count on you to make radio happen. Next week at this time, between 6 and 7 on Tuesday, it's Trans Positive. We hope you'll tune in, find out what's going on, and make a pledge or re-up your pledge. This has been Preference. We're going to hear Magnetic Fields closing out the the death of Ferdinand de Saussure. I don't actually know how to pronounce his name, but it also is Saussure's birthday, along with Tina Turner and Wayland Flowers' birthdays. So thought I'd give a shout out to him and to all of them. Thanks, everyone.
Said I'm not so sure I even know what it is. No understanding, no closure. It is a nemesis. You can't use a bulldozer to study orchids, he said. So we don't know anything.
That's why, darling, It's incredible that someone so undetectable thinks that I am undetectable too. You know, for people who are living with HIV, we finally have the science to back up what I kind of knew about a decade ago, that undetectable means you are untransmittable. And hopefully this will help us fight the stigma associated with being positive. Like never before has someone been in every way.
You're listening to KBOO, KBOO, Portland, 90.7 FM. And next up is Calculated Conversation.
KBOO is getting ready for our annual book and record sale.
This is a great time to clean out those closets and shelves and turn your old books, records, and CDs into cash for community radio.
Bring them to KBOO Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. till 7 p.m.
We are accepting donations of books, vinyl records, CDs, and DVDs through Saturday, December 14th. The sale will be held on December 21st. Stay tuned for details.
Your unwanted books, records, and DVDs are treasure to someone else. Help them find new homes while raising money for our community radio station, KBOO.
If you have questions or want to arrange for a pickup of donations, please email volunteer